For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome to a double parsha. Matos and Masa, this is the end of Bamidbar, right? Okay, so Matos and Masa deal with various things. First of all, the parsha opens up with vows. It's a different type of vows that can be annulled. Okay, it talks about, for example, the parsha opens up with this. If a woman makes a vow, a lady makes a vow, right, and she's in the house of her father, her father can annul it. And if she's married, her husband can annul it, okay? Which I know doesn't sit well with the feminists, but that's too bad. Okay. And then the parsha goes on from there and talks about, after the vows and things, there's a counting of the different tribes of who is going to go to war. And this is a war against Midian to take revenge for what they were nichshalas in with their daughters, right? The thing with Baal Peor and the relations, right? So now we're going to go to war with them. So that's discussed in the Parsha, and actually that continues through. And as a matter of fact, we'll see in the Parsha that Moshe Rabbeinu is told that he will die after this battle. Then we have an incident that two and a half tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, say they want land on the other side of the Jordan River and not in Israel proper because they have a lot of cattle. Right? That's right. The first cowboys. Okay, so we'll have to discuss that. This is a tough group. Okay. All right. Then as we move on into Parshas Masa, we have a description of 42 different encampments. And we'll see the mystical dimensions, some of them of that. We also have a description in our parshas of the Ir Miklat, the cities of refuge. Okay? That's discussed at the end of Masa, different cities of refuge for a person who accidentally killed somebody. Right? Or, excuse me, kilt somebody, as they say in Texas. K-I-L-T. Okay? And then we're told a little about another instance with the righteous daughters of Tzelophehad, right? Machla, Tirzah, Chaglah, Milcah. These four daughters are about marrying in within the same tribe, so the Nachla, the Yerusha, the inheritance would stay within the same tribe. Okay, a little bit of a continuation from a previous parsha in reference to them. Okay, so that's some of the review. Now we'll go back, get some insights. First thing I want to tell you, from our parsha, Matos, chapter 30, verse 2, it says, Moshe spoke to the head of the tribes, and he said, Zeh hadavar asher tziva Hashem. This is the thing that God commanded. It seems like such an innocent little verse, doesn't it? You wouldn't think deep implications were in this verse. You wouldn't think that the basis, one of the 13 basic fundamental principles of faith, is in this verse, would you now?
You went out west, and they're
right.
They wait to hear all the wisdom from the west.
All right, the wisdom from the west. I thought it was from the south. Okay, here it is. Zeh adavar shetziva Hashem. Listen to it from Rashi. Prophets, prophecies, Nevi'im is Navu, they usually prophesize with the words Viko Amar Hashem. And Hashem spoke thusly. Ko. This is a Rashi. Ko means like. You know, it's like this. When you're describing some, right? It's not this, but it's like this. Right? Okay? So Moshe had a mila over the other prophets, right? Shemisnava Belashan Zehadovar. Moshe Rabbeinu was unique in that he prophesies with the words Zehadovar. This is what Hashem said. Not this is like, this is exactly. Zeh also always sometimes refers to in the Torah as like it's so clear you can point to it. Like we said at the Song of the Sea, Zeh Keli Ve'anvehu. This is my God, right? Zeh, this is it. So that was one of the clarity, not just in quantity, but in quality. The prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu is unique. He's the father of all prophets. This is one of the 13 principles of faith, that no one is a prophet like Moshe. He prophesies Zeh HaDavar. This is the thing. No one else prophesies with that clarity. Most of the times, as we read in Ba'al Yischa, it was in a riddle. God came to prophets in a dream, in a vision, right? In a parable, in a riddle. Not so Moshe, my servants, but Kol Beisi Nemanu. He's the most faithful in my house. Pe el pe adaber bo. I speak to him mouth to mouth. Clear, right? That was the lesson Hashem gave Miriam. Here it is again. Ze hadavar. Right? Very clear. So that's not, it's just interesting. You got these little psukim that we read every year. We never think, never see this. This is a very important Rashi. Rashi's telling you, okay? Good. Next, Lamed Aleph Gimel, chapter 31, the third verse. Chapter 31, the third verse says the following. Moshe said to the people, get ready for war, right? I'm going to pick for you men for the army, right? And by the way, on that word, men for the army, Rashi says, tzaddikim. Tzaddikim. You know who are picked for the army of Israel? Tzaddikim. The secular army, who do you pick? Right? The most valiant, brave, strong, whatever, right? Unless you're under political pressure, then, you're taking women and all these things. But then it was the standard on, right, big, strong guys, right? Everybody feared Sichon and Og. They were big, strong guys, right? Fortified cities. Israel, it wasn't like that. Israel wasn't like that. They understood that their battle was in God's hands. And who was going to be victorious in war if they were righteous? Anshei Anoshim Mitzvah, men for the army, says Rashi, Tzaddikim, the most righteous, only went to the army. That's what it was. Very interesting. We get all caught up in the army of Israel, the Tzavah and Tzavah, but we have to remember our power is in spirituality, Torah mitzvahs. The bigger tzaddikim, the more will be matzliach in war. Okay, so continuing with that verse. Ve'yu al Midyan lases nikmas Hashem b'Midyan. And it'll be on Midian, and we'll do vengeance for God to Midian. Okay? Says Rashi on this, vengeance for God, if you look earlier, when Hashem gives the commandment in verse 2, he says, Nikom Nikmas B'nai Yisrael, take vengeance for the children of Israel and battle Midian. Right? And Moshe says, no, take vengeance for God. Well, there's many things you can learn from this, but Rashi teaches us, what does it mean that these are interchangeable? Take vengeance for Israel. And Moshe says, take vengeance for God. Sha'oimed keneged Yisrael, ki'ilu oimed keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whoever stands against Israel is like he's trying to battle Hashem. He's against God. That's what it teaches you. And that, by the way, you have to understand, is the subconscious psyche of anti-Semitism. Whether it's the Nazis, whether it was Christian missionaries, whoever it was, Spanish Inquisitions, all these things, what was behind hating the Jew was hating God. And by the way, that's why 13 is an unlucky number for them. Because the numerical value of the word Echad, one, as in Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, God is one, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, God is one, Echad is numerical value 13. For them, that's unlucky. They consider it because they don't believe that God is one. They have a triple header system or whatever they got going there, right? That's the truth. That's what 13 is unlucky by them. Remember this. I'm starting off this shir with Shema Yisrael because God willing, we're going to end it with Shema Yisrael. Okay, so keep that in mind. I had to plug it. Okay? So that's the psychology behind anti-Semitism. Israel is the recognized ambassador of God in the world, trying to teach morality, the belief in one God, monotheism, right? And they are against that. So the anti-Semitism is really they're battling God. But they can't battle God, so they try to kill the Jew, the representative of God on earth. That's what this is telling you. Okay? Very important. Okay. Chapter 31, verse 23. We're still in Matos. We are told, Bataher, to purify. Okay, what is this talking about? This is referring, after the war of Midian, we got back vessels, we got a lot of vessels and stuff. And from this war, Tahir, to purify it, we learn how you take a non-kosher or a vessel that was in a goyish hand, and how you make it pure, tahar, for Jewish people to use. Right? How do you do that?
Bury the goy, don't you?
Well, that's always a good idea. But, oh no, this is going to get on the internet, they're going to hear, like, we're going to get all these letters again. Okay, the guy, you know, he has to edit these tapes now. He calls Ben Yom and all that, and goes, you know, the rabbi said Negro on the table or something. I don't know. He tells us. All right, at any rate. So we take a vessel from a Nochri, from a Goy, and what do you have to do? Basically, Megali Malavan Ba'or, you have to, like, put it in fire in the same way that it was used, okay? In other words, if some was used to boil, you have to boil things, water, to overflow. If it was used to fry, you have to put it in the fire to that degree of heat, okay? So that's one thing. Kederach tashmisho higalso. In the way that it was used, that's the way you have to do hagola. That's the way you have to put it in fire. In the same manner that it was used, you have to put in the same amount of heat in that manner, in the fire, to be purified. Then, right, then it has to be toivelt in a mikveh. It has to go in a mikveh that is kosher for women to use. Okay? Why do I say that? Because there's certain men who have no mitzvah per se most of the time, maybe on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur they do, to use a mikveh, can get away with using a different type of mikveh. You can even use a pool, shut off the filter. Okay? Because for men, it's not really an obligation. Okay. But when it comes to these kelim, it has to be 100% mikvah, the same type of mikvah a woman would use. Okay? So that is what, this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us this. So that, all these things that we learn about, taking your dishes to the mikvah and Hagolah, during Pesach time, it's very popular. Some people want to take their vessels and purify them with all the chametz, so they can use on Pesach. So we have a big boiling pot here of water, and they fill the pots in it, right? This is all derived from this battle in Midian, how we kosher vessels, both to be able to use if non-kosher ingredients was in it, and also how to make them tahor after a non-Jewish person has had it. Okay? You see that? I said non-Jewish person instead of goy. They'll like that. They like that. Okay. Lamed Beis, Kaf Beis, 32:22, chapter 32, verse 22, we have a verse, Vayisim Nekim Hashem Yisrael. That's an important verse, guys. The Torah many times, in conjunction with everything else, teaches us good character traits, midos. Here we learn, Vayisim Nekim Hashem Yisrael. You shall be like clean, you shall be scot-free, if you will, right? In the eyes of God, in the eyes of your fellow Jew. Okay? The question here is, well, as long as God knows what I'm doing is right, why do I have to be concerned about my fellow Jew? Right? Look at it again, guys. You shall be clean before God, and before Israel. Right? You should be guiltless. You know, you're making sure that everything you're doing is beyond reproach. Right? So the question here, if God knows what I'm doing is right, why do you tell me also in the eyes of my fellow Jew? Here? It's emphasizing. Guys, the answer is it's emphasizing to you. It's not enough that God knows. That's an amazing statement, isn't it? It's not enough God knows. You have to be beyond the shadow of the doubt. You cannot, no fellow Jew can harbor any suspicion that you're doing something wrong. Beyond reproach, right? That's, you have to make sure you do this, okay? So, or else you're like setting a stumbling block before them, okay? There's many type of examples, right? If for some reason, I don't know, you're in the middle of nowhere, and you know, you got to go to the bathroom, you're using a McDonald's, and you walk out, I see you.
Yeah.
You know, you come out of McDonald's, I have to say, hey, look, you know, I had to go to the bathroom, I had to use it. You know, or else you'll think, hey, what's going on here? Of course he didn't eat the wet. Maybe he just had a Cherry Coke there. Okay, maybe that's the one. Or maybe he had just the French fries. I don't know, right? And beyond a shadow of doubt, God knows I didn't eat there. It's not good enough. You know, this is suspicious. Looks suspicious. You guys can probably think of better practical examples every day. You know, you see people, you wonder, you know, right? Okay. So that's that mitzvah. I mean, that's not the whole to it, but okay.
That's the Maris Ayin.
Good. Maris Ayin is a similar, they're related. That's Mishpacha. Maris Ayin, what it looks like to the eye, right? Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. For a long time, there's such a thing, you know, we have a mitzvah, you're not allowed to cook a meat and milk together. So evidently, there's states in Halacha that almond milk evidently makes some sort of dish with almond milk. Almonds have some sort of milk. White. So you're not allowed to use it. It's parv. There's nothing wrong with it. Unless you have the almonds right there. Unless you have them right there, you're not allowed to use it because why? My sign. Right? It looks like you're cooking meat and milk together. People aren't going to know. Right? Unless you have the almonds right there. Okay? So that's a good example. Okay. Now, chapter 32, verse 1. And this goes through verse like 20. Let's talk about the 2.5 tribes wanting to dwell on the other side of the Jordan River. Okay? First of all, they state they have a lot of cattle, and the land that used to belong to Sihon and Og, those two giants that they captured on the side of the river, a lot of grazing land. A lot of settled there. Okay. That's what it seems like on the surface. So, number one, we have a problem because we know these people were big tzaddikim, big righteous people. Why would they want, they have a lot, doesn't stem here. They have a lot of cattle. These are people that are, you know, like I said, they ain't cowboys. They're interested in grazing land instead of living in Eretz Yisrael, land of Israel, right? What's going on here? Why would they want to do that? Number two, that's question number one. Okay, number two is, they say this to Moshe. Moshe said, hey, look, don't you remember what happened with the spy incident? Do you want to, you know, like take away the whole heart of the people? You're going to sit there while everybody fights the war to conquer Israel? And it says, only on this condition can you do it. You go in front and lead Israel an army, you know, to conquer the land. And they settle, and they conquer the land. Then you can go back afterwards after you helped, you know, with the conquered land and settle in your land. And Reuben, God, and Manasseh say, that's, of course, that's what we had in mind. When we said we wanted land on that side, we didn't mean just to go there. We meant, of course, not only are we going to do that, and they did do this, not only are we going to leave them war, we're going to wait till all of their land is settled and divided up. And only then will we go back and settle. Yet, despite that, they sat there and took a tongue lashing from Moshe Rabbeinu for about 15 verses. They mamish sat there and got rebuke and musr. Burn and musr. They got from Moshe Rabbeinu. And undeserved, because they always had planned to lead them, right?
Yeah, they didn't make it look
like so. So why? That's the second question. Why they sit there and just listen to Moshe? Why they say, hey, of course, you know, this is what we had in mind all the time. So the Sfas Emes, they tell a story in the Sfas Emes, the great Ger Rebbe. When he was a little boy, his grandfather was the Rebbe, the Chiddush Yarim, who you've heard me quote many times here. And What happened with the little boy, even as a genius, he was a genius, even as a little boy, he was a child prodigy, and he was learning all night long. So, came like 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was, he went to sleep. His grandfather comes in like 7 o'clock, sees the boy sleeping. And he starts, you know, that was late, sleep 7 o'clock in the morning. He starts giving the boy burning musser. You know, well, I see you, Butlin, you know, just no good, sleeping all day, it's 7 o'clock, what are you doing? And he started giving it to him, left life for an hour long. He started giving him musser, it says. And, you know, his friend said, you know, why didn't you tell him already? After his grandfather left, Kushan Ref, so his father Amos took it, and his friend says, why didn't you tell your Zaidi what happened, that you were learning all night? So the Svasama says, well, he says, why were you quiet? He says, there's a chance that I could hear a musser from my holy Zaidi, and I should give that up? I should give that up? It was beautiful musser. Such ethical lessons I can learn from how he told me, you know. And I learned the chashivas, of the importance of time and Torah. I would have missed out on all that. So he, let him think what he did, but I don't want to miss out. Same thing here. That's the answer. B'nai Reuben, the children of Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh, they're getting musser from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gets to speak to you. That's a big honor. Much less give you musser. I think it's to say, you know, Yeshiva, Levi, I should get a patch from my Rebbe. So, and you know, so they didn't want to move. So they didn't stop Moshe Rabbeinu. They let him keep talking to him and Shura, even though they had in mind the whole time to lead him in Israel, because they wanted to hear the Musar of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? All right, so we answered question number 2. We went backwards, all right? Why they kept quiet when Moshe was giving rebuke. Question number 1 is a bigger question. Now, people of this caliber, what was it that they were interested in their cattle, not settling Eretz Yisrael proper? And you got to remember, Eretz Yisrael, there's a kedusha, a holiness that you can that you can get out of it that you can't get anyplace else, especially men of this caliber, right? The tremendous, tremendous kedusha. It says, "Avir Eretz Yisrael b'chachim," that the air of the land of Israel makes one wise. How much more so? That's just for an average person. For tzaddikim like this, how much they could tu'ayif, how much they could grow in spirituality, live in Eretz Yisrael. So, to answer this question, we go back to Pinchas. In chapter 27, verse 12, chapter 27, verse 12, in Pinchas, we have Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to Hashem. Hashem first tells him, you know, go up to the mount of Har Yivrim and look at the land, right? And then you're going to, basically, I'm going to gather you in. You're going to die, right? So, at this time, Moshe Rabbeinu already was in the land of Sichon and Og. This is the land that Reuben and Gad were going to occupy, right? This is the land they were going to occupy. So, at that time, Moshe, you know, says, you know, like, basically, appoint another leader of Israel. But at this point, Rashi makes the following comment. Kiven shenichnas Moshe l'nachlas b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven samach. When Moshe Rabbeinu entered the future inheritance of Reuven and Gad, right, this land of Sichon and Og, outside of Jordan, he became very happy. Why? K'medayme li shehutar nidri. It would seem to me that Hashem, so to speak, has revoked his decree, and I can lead Israel, the children of Israel, into Israel, because behold, I'm actually in the land that 2.5 tribes are going to occupy. Okay? That's the Rashi and Pinchas. Keep that in mind, and listen what the Chiddush Yerim says in the name of his Rabbi, Rav Bunim, Rav Simcha Bunim, Rav Peshishcha, just a second. Okay. He says, first of all, look at the words. Chapter 32, verse 1. Umikne Rav Hayal of Ne Reuben of Ne God Atzum Oid. Which means, the children of Reuben and children of God had much cattle. Okay? But, if you look at that first word, Mikne, can mean cattle. It can also mean, from the word kinyan, to acquire, to make an acquisition, right? To have a strong cleaving to something, right? And what do they have a cleaving to? Rav, which means a lot, like we said, a lot of cattle, but it also means rav. They're rav. They're rabbi. They had a strong acquisition, a strong connection to their rav, to Moshe Rabbeinu, atzum od, to an extreme degree, right? And therefore, they saw the land of Yazer and the land of Gilad, the Hine, and behold, Hamakom, this place, Me'akom Mikne, this is the place of Mikne, of acquisition. What does that mean? They saw, Rashi tells us, they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu will be buried there. Right? It's a land of acquisition, where it's going to acquire Moshe, so to speak. So they wanted, they had such a tremendous miknerav, a tremendous acquisition, a tremendous cleaving to their Rebbe, they wanted to be in the land that he was going to be buried in. Okay? That's one insight. Okay? Now, says Rav Simcha Bunim, another insight. So, this was their spiritual calculation, their tremendous self-sacrifice calculation. Listen to this. They knew, okay, that the decree on Moshe was they can't land in the land of Israel, he had to die in the desert, right? So they figured, you know what? If we don't enter the other side of the Jordan and we settle here because of our tremendous desire to cleave to our Rav, to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? You know what? You know what will happen? This, post facto, will become the land of Israel. If we don't go into the land of Israel proper and settle here, we are 2.5 tribes of Israel. This is Israel. And you see from the Rashi and Pinchas, Moshe also thought that. Moshe also had that Havamina, right? Behold, he was happy when he entered this land, because he thought maybe Taka the decree is revoked. So Reuven and God had a tremendous self-sacrifice. They were willing to give up that beautiful holiness of the land of Israel. Tzaddikim like that could have gotten such a great hashbah from. And not only that, they were willing for the rest of Israel to think low of them. Like, gosh, you guys, all you think about is materialism, your cattle. You don't want to settle the land of Israel proper, right? And you don't want to lead us into war? That was worth it. The bizyoinus, the shame, and the look down upon, right? And giving up spirituality, their own ruchnius aliyah, their own spiritual aliyah that they could have had, it was worth it for them if they could keep their leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, alive. Because now, by settling on this side of the Jordan, oh, this becomes the land of Israel. Moshe's here. You know what that means? The decree's revoked. Moshe can stay alive. He can stay our Rebbe. He can stay the leader of Israel. He doesn't have to die. It's worth it to us. It's worth that we remained our entire lives here, never land, enter the land of Israel. Everybody think bad of us as long as we can keep our precious Moshe Rabbeinu alive. You hear that? So that's one of the lessons. You can't take the stories of the Torah lightly. You have to see the deep insights of these great tzaddikim. It was worth it to them even their, oh, this is amazing. It was worth it even that their beloved Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu would think bad about them. It was worth it. Right? Again, Musaf from him. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you another self-sacrificing instance. It connects as soon as... Should we turn over here? We'll try to get this on this side of tape. The other self-sacrifice, Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu is told in chapter 31, verse 12. Chapter 31, verse 2. He said by Hashem, Nekom nikmas b'nei Israel, mesa midyanim, take vengeance for the children of Israel from the Midianites, you know, go to war, and then, achar ta'asaf elamecha, then you're going to be gathered into your nation, in other words, you're going to die. This is it. Moshe knew that his death was contingent on the victory in this war. A contingent may not be a good word, but anyway, right after this war, he was going to die, right? So, you might have thought that Moshe would have delayed the war, right? Keep himself alive. Because as long as he's alive, Israel's not going to worship idols, by the way. So it wouldn't just be for himself. What did he do? Very next verse. Immediately. I have one more mitzvah to fulfill. I'm going to do it with zerizus, with zeal, even though my death is contingent on it. Vayidaber Moshe el Ha'am. Let's get ready for war and take vengeance for God. Right? If he would have said vengeance for the children of Israel like God told him, this is another reason he changed the language. If he would have said take vengeance for the children of Israel, Israel knew that his death was on it. They would have said, forget it. We'll mavata our covet. We'll forgive our insult, our vengeance to keep you alive, Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe Rabbeinu says it's the vengeance of God. You got to take war. Even though his death was on the matter, Tuli Aladavar, right? So you see how the mitzvah itself was more important in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes than even life. Because he did it immediately. Doesn't matter, he's going to die sooner. This is the mitzvah at hand. You have to do it. And with all that, Moshe didn't do the mitzvah. He gave it over because of an inyan of derech eretz, of gratitude. Why? Because he was brought up in Midian. It wouldn't be right that I battle the place that was my home. Right? The same way he didn't do the first three plagues. The Nile River saved him. I can't strike the Nile River. I owe the Nile River. It's inanimate. Right? Same thing. Moshe Rabbeinu shows at the same time that the mitzvah is more dear to him than life himself. And yet, so he does the mitzvah immediately, and yet, he doesn't do the mitzvah. He gives it over, right, to Eleazar to do it, right, and Pinchas takes over. Pinchas does it, right, because of an idea of Akar Satov, of showing gratitude to Midian. So, the character trait, you know, the mitzvah is dear to life itself, but yet showing gratitude, and a fine kind, an edel kind, and good character traits, overrides the mitzvah in this case. It has to be handled. So again, once again, the mitzvah is dear to life itself to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So he hurries to do the mitzvah, even though his death is going to be right afterwards. And yet, with all that, the mitzvah that's going to cost him his life because of an inyan of derech eretz. It's not derech eretz. It's not good manners that I strike the nation that was my host. He gives over the mitzvah that's dear to life to Pinchas to do. He can't do it because I owe Midian in some fashion, right? That's Shabbos Shiurim, Rav Mordechai Miller. Okay. Oops. Hey, even with all the righteous calculations of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, what can I tell you? The bottom line is they didn't live in Eretz Yisrael proper. They didn't live in the land of Israel proper, even though they had the greatest intentions. And what happened? When the exile came, if you look at Chronicles, exile came, they were missing the holiness of the land of Israel, and therefore they were exiled first. They were the first to be exiled. That's how important it is to live in the land of Israel. Okay? Okay. Now, this is an interesting insight. I don't know exactly how it ties in and where. The Chiddush Rim brings it in our Torah portion in chapter 30, verse 2. I guess it has to do with that they had a lot of cattle. Maybe that's it. No, I don't know how this. What this has to do, but it's a very beautiful insight. A person has to realize everything he has, you know, in any dimension, whether it's mental or spiritual, emotional, or physical, materialistic area, it's all from God. So let's talk about materialism, okay? Since that's what we, you know, equate to more than anything else. At the moment, the person thinks, you know, everything I got, I deserve it. I have it coming to me. Then you're going to have it coming to you. You're really going to have it coming to you. The minute you say that, he becomes a person that's grabbing it for himself. What does he mean? Da. Know this. Shema rak matanas makadosh baruch hu. Everything you have is only a gift from Hashem, right? Umatanas chinam mishamayim. It's a free gift they're giving you from heaven. Hashem's giving you a free gift, right? So once you realize that, as long as you realize, Akadosh Baruch Hu blessed me, he gave me this, he gave me that, right? Whatever it is. Az yesh kiyum larachush. Then there's a kiyum. It's established. It stays. It will have an endurance to it. Whatever you have, because you recognize it comes from the most enduring thing in the world, God. As long as you recognize that, it'll endure and stay with you. But when you forget the one who gave it to you. Or it seems to you that was your own actions and your own wisdom that got you this. By this you're grabbing it for yourself. You're saying that you earn it. And then you cut the line. You cut off the line from where it was attached, it was rooted up high to the Eternal One. You just cut it off. And now, therefore now it's no longer going to be akium to this that you have, but it can be lost. Okay? Very important. And we have a verse for this. We'll talk about this more, God willing, in Devarim. God gives you strength, to do great, but Unklus translates that to acquire acquisitions. Okay, so what's the lesson here? The lesson here is a person has to realize everything he gets is from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You should always thank him. You always thank and ask Hashem to continue the bracha. You know where we learn that from? Anybody remember? Leah. She did half of it right. She thanked Hashem for giving her Yehuda. Right? Yehuda is from the word Taita, thank you. But she became barren. She ceased giving, she already had four children. But she ceased giving birth. Because as long as Hashem is blessing you, that's not the time to thank. I mean, it is. As long as you say thank you and continue the blessing. And she did it. That's interesting. We learned both things from her. Okay. If you notice, in chapter 32, verse 20, Moshe Rabbeinu teaches a little derech eretz to Reuven, God, and Menashe. Maybe this will answer your question, maybe not. Okay? They say the following. In chapter 32, verse 17, the two and a half tribes say, "Vanachnu nechalets chushim lifnei bnei Israel." We will go before the children of Israel, right, until they come to their place. And Moshe repeats them or corrects them in three verses later, verse 20. "Vayomar leihem Moshe." Moshe says, "Im tasu adavar zeh." If you do the following things, "Im techaltzu lifnei Hashem." If you go before God in war. You hear the difference? They say, we'll go before the children of Israel in verse 17. And Moshe corrects them. Yes, it'll be fine. You can have the land if you do this thing. If you go before God. What's the difference? Right? Moshe's correcting him saying, you have to march because of God. The first concern a person's march to war or anything else is to do Lifnei Hashem, to do the Ratzon Hashem, to do the will of God, right? Their mistake was, we'll march before the children of Israel. They had compassion on their brethren, right? Abarbanel says on this, the difference is, you have to do things because God mandated to do it, not because it seems like it's a rachmanis, it's a mercy thing to do. He says, human definitions of compassion are nebulous and changeable. And often proven wrong by history. The only guide for rachmanis, for mercy and compassion and success, is to do lifnei Hashem. Do the ratzon Hashem first. Okay. With that, we'll go into the parshas Masa now. Okay, the second part. So the first thing I want to tell you is an amazing thing. The Shulchan Aruch brings us down, but in the name of Sadi Agon, that these 42 encampments that are described in our at the beginning of our Torah portion, he says, I'll just read you the words. And this is Ramban actually is saying this. He says, Sidus Gedolus, tremendous mysticism, deep secrets, Be'elu Membes Messiahs, Shobnei Israel, and these 42 encampments of the children of Israel, Umagan Avraham, B'Shem Tzoram, or the Magan Avraham says in the name of Tzoram, or that these 42 encampments, Ye'elu Remez La Membes Shem HaMefurish. There is a hint to God's 42 letter name. Right? Velo lahafsik bekriyosam, and if you're reading the Torah portion, you shouldn't stop in the middle of these 42 encampments. You should read it from all the way through, because it could be you're dividing God's name up. Amazing. Again, looks like simple, innocent verses. Layers and layers of deep deep secrets in the Torah. Okay? Now, the rule was as following. A person accidentally killed someone, they had to go to one of these cities of refuge. The 42 Levitical cities, there was 42 Levitical cities, they were all cities of refuge also. But there were six appointed ones, right? And they were the main cities of refuge, right? I mean, the total of 48. Those are also considered Levitical cities. That's 48 cities. But six main ones, you got that? 42 really Levitical cities, the other six were mainly Ir Miklats. And a person would go there if he accidentally killed, and when did he leave? When the Kohen Gadol died. Kohen Gadol died, that was a sign he could leave. So again, you see that everything was determined by God. Only God, Hashem, knew how much of a accidental murder it was. How much of a shogeg it was. You know what I mean? There's an accident. You drink a pint of liquor, you're driving on the road, you accidentally killed somebody. Well, you know, how much is that an accident? You know, right? You know, only Hashem can determine how much you were really should have been, you were negligent, you should have been more careful, and how much really was an accident. So that's determined by Hashem knowing the length span, the lifespan of the Kohen Gadol, how long you should be there. While one guy who accidentally killed might only be in the Ir Miklat for 3 years, another guy might be for 17 years. Right? Okay? So it was perfect judgment. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you a little mysticism. Again, just to show you that these little... Why is the Torah bothered to tell them about every single encampment? 42 names, you know? What's going on here? Or Chaim HaKadosh says this, the Kedushas HaLevi says this, many of the words are the following. The parsha starts off when it talks about these different encampments. Be'ela Maseyam Lemotzieyam. These are their travels of their going out. So it sounds like an awkward language, right? Motzieyam is to go out. Okay. These are the travelings of their going out. Okay, right? So he says, listen to this. You should know Shalichas Yisroel b'midbar ha'yisa lebar nitzoyses kadoshim, that Israel's traveling in the desert was for the purpose of extracting holy sparks, godly sparks. I don't know what this means. But whatever it is, there's these godly sparks in each one of these encampments, and therefore he says, you know, that's why you find that Israel is camped in one place for 1 year, they camped in another place for 12 hours. All for the purpose of however many time it took to extract however many sparks were there. This is pure mysticism, guys. I'm just telling it to you to let you know there's deep secrets even in this listing of encampments in the deserts. Okay? Okay, so therefore it says, and that's why these... I'm interrupting myself. He even goes on and says this is the reason that these travelings... continue. They first says we came out of Egypt, right? And then it goes into the 42 encampments. So why tell me about Egypt? What's the connection? Just like Egypt was a Kor Barzel, was a cleansing furnace, somehow cleansed us, so too us going through these 42 encampments acted as a cleansing, somehow, spiritually. Okay? And therefore, Ubezeyu Nishmoisam Ru'uim Lebar and Nitzisis HaKadoshis B'kol Makom Sher Yibou, by going through the Kor Barzel of the cleansing furnace of Egypt, then our neshamas were more clear and clean to gather up these other godly sparks every place they went. Okay? And so then he talks, and that's what the language means. Eilam Maseyam, these are their travelings, Lemotziyam, for the purpose of taking out. Taking out what? These godly sparks. Okay? In another dimension, it says everybody goes through 42 travels in their lives. 42, I don't know what that means. Moves, travels, what it is. But everybody, this becomes like a Maseyavas for everybody. And it says that Israel themselves go through 42 encampments. Right? We go through 42. The Medrash, Barbanel quotes the Medrash that in the future redemption, Hashem will bring us back to those very same 42 encampments, right? And he quotes a verse in Yechezkel, Ve'evesi etchem el midbar amim, I'll bring you to the desert of the nations, right? And that is hinted to in our verse when it says, Ve'ele maseim, and these are the travels. These travels, it says, these travels, you gum lemotziam, they'll be also for our going out. In other words, we'll do it again in the last redemption. Okay? Now, one more thing, guys. Listen to this one. You'll like this. Chapter 33, verse 1. Eile Masei B'nei Yisrael. You see those first four words, guys? Eile Masei B'nei Yisrael. You see it? Eile Masei B'nei Yisrael. Right? Well, then the verse continues. Asher Yatsu Meretz Mitzrayim, that we came out of Egypt, B'yad Moshe Aaron. You know, we asked, they came out of Egypt in the hands of Moshe Aaron. We asked the big question. No one loved Israel as much as Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Right? And yet we see at the burning bush, Moshe, for 7 days, argues with God. He doesn't want to go redeem the people. What's going on? Doesn't make sense. You know, we said, doesn't make sense. We know how much Moshe Rabbeinu loves Hashem. Appears to Moshe, says, I want to redeem Israel. You would have thought Moshe would say, great, I'm ready to go. No, he argues for 7 days. So we said back then, why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to go because he was flesh and blood. Meaning, a redemption by flesh and blood, by definition, is finite. It won't be eternal. Moshe wanted you. Moshe said, I want you to go, Hashem. You take them out. If you take Israel out of Egypt, I know it's an eternal redemption. That's basically what Moshe was asking. Is it going to be an eternal redemption? Or is it going to be a future exile? Is it going to be future exiles? I don't want to take them out. What's the point? Take them out of this persecution so they can go into another persecution? What's the point? Okay? So that was the argument for 7 days. Moshe Rabbeinu did love Israel to such an extent he wanted it to be an eternal redemption. You go, Hashem, not me, please. Let this be the ultimate redemption. And Hashem says, no, it can't be. It can't be. It's not ready yet. Therefore, this is hinted to in our verse. Why? If you look at this verse, the first four words, Eilen Masei B'nei Yisrael, is hinting to future exiles. These four words, Eilen Masei B'nei Yisrael, the acronym of these four words, the acronym of these four words, Eila, the Aleph, that stands for Edom, the exile we're in now. Masai, the travels, the Mem, first letter, stands for Mead, right? Mede Persia is one of the exiles. B'nai, the children, right? The next word, that's for Babel, Babylonia. And Yisroel, right? Yisroel, the Yud, Yavon, Greece. Those are the four exiles. That we always talk about the four exiles that we're in. We're in Edom right now, right? So look at the verse. It's beautiful, guys. Eile Masei B'nei Yisrael. These are the travelings of Israel. The future exiles. The travelings. The exiles of Israel. Why? These four exiles, right, of Edom, Mede, right, Babylon, and Yavon, these will be the future exiles of travelings of Israel because, Asher Yatsu Meretz Mitzrayim, because we came out of Egypt, B'yad Moshe V'Aaron. We came out of Egypt by flesh and blood, Moshe and Aaron. Hashem himself didn't redeem us. Right out of that exile, therefore we have to finish the exile of Egypt with these four exiles. Okay? That's the Ketanis Ur. Okay. Isn't that beautiful? Okay. By the way, in chapter 33, verse 12, just another interesting insight, Midbar Sin, it's called, right? And really, we know this place, the mountain there, is called Sinai. And it's really Midbar Sin, the desert of Sin, right? Samech Yud Nun, Right, but because the Ten Commandments were given here, the Ten Commandments numerical value is a Yud, so a Yud was added to sin and became Sinai. Right? Also, sin, numerical value, sin, Samech is 60, Yud is 10, right? That's 70, and Nun is 50, that's 120, because Moshe Rabbeinu was up there 120 days, three sets of 40 days and 40 nights. Again, the tremendous depths and wisdom, you know, to the Torah. Okay, the 25th encampment of these travelings was called Chashmoina, right? That means Chashmoina, right? 25th encampment, Chanukah. Chanukah, which means Chanukah, they rested on the 25th, is hinted to it in the Torah, in our Torah portion. Chanukah. The resting, Chanu means rest, in camp of the 25th, Chashmoina, Chashmonaim of Chanukah. Okay? Okay. Golus, exile is a piece of death, you should know. How do we know that? We see that a person that killed accidentally, really, even though he killed accidentally, he deserves death. He took someone else's life. So, he didn't do it on purpose, so you can't actually kill him. So what do? You give him something equivalent to death. That's exile. That's a golus. So, that's important to know, because we are in the 3 weeks, right? We are in the 3 weeks, and we are in golus. We should know that. We really, in Hashem's mercy, he put us in exile instead of destroying all of Israel. This is a replacement of it. And that is why, by the way, this parsha, it's always read during the 3 weeks, right? And this year we read it right before Tisha B'Av. It's a parsha right before Rosh Chodesh Av, right before the start of the 9 days, right? To remind us that we are in the matzav of masa, of traveling, of exiles, in the middle of these four exiles, the last one, right? That's what the connection. These travelings of Israel represent future exiles. That's exactly what we're in now, and that's what we're commemorating during the 9 days and the 3 weeks, the destruction of the temple and being in exile. That's what it's all about. So also, you should know that Aaron died on Rosh Chodesh Av, which is this Monday. Sunday night is Rosh Chodesh Av, and he was the attribute of peace. And we know that this exile, the reason we're in it, and the destruction of the temple, because there was a causeless hatred between us, a lack of peace. And therefore, Aaron, who was the attribute of peace, who dies in Rosh Chodesh Av, right, is to teach us this lesson that is exactly, we need that attribute of peace, right, to correct why we're in this parsha of exile. Right, to get out of the exile, we have to adopt that attitude, the attribute of Aaron, to love peace and pursue peace. Okay. Two more things. One, this doesn't need a comment. You guys can tell me. Chapter 32, verse 55-56. I'm just going to read it. If you want to know why there's source in Israel, why these things are happening, okay? Chapter 32, that's not right, is it? Chapter 33, I'm sorry. Chapter 33. Verse 55-56, just listen to the words, guys. Listen to the words. We're commanded to go in there and wipe everybody out. Right? So what does the verse say? The imlo tarishu es yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem. If you do not conquer and kick out the people that are living there in Israel, v'ayasher sosiru lehem, those that you leave there, right? There'll be lesichim b'yineim, there'll be like thorn in your eyes, right, and in your sides, v'tsaru etzchem, and they'll chapa you, they'll cause you tsoros, they'll afflict you, ala arz asher atem yoshvim ba. If you don't kick them out, there're going to be thorns in your eyes and in your sides, and they're going to afflict you in the land that you're dwelling. V'haya kasher demisi lasas lehem eselachem, and what I was going to do to them, I'm going to do to you. You don't make peace treaties in Israel. You kick them out. Listen to this. This is from the Stone Chumash. Only in the perspective of Hashem's wisdom can this passage be understood. No human ruler, right, or dictator has the right to decree that an entire population can be exterminated or exiled. But Hashem revealed that the Canaanite presence was didn't stem. it didn't stem with Israel's mission on earth. Okay? History is the most conclusive proof of this. For the fact is that Jews, liberals in particular, could not bring themselves to eliminate the Canaanites. Right? And that's the same thing of Jewish liberals today. And the result was what? That we were drawn into idolatry because of the Canaanites in the future, you'll see. And debauchery and immorality. And we were oppressed by these people, right? And persecuted and finally exiled. All because we didn't listen to our God and we thought we could be more merciful than Him and let Him live. Peace treaties. Those who are the liberals, or who are defending, the ones that the liberals are defending today, well, chas v'sholem, could be our oppressors tomorrow. And I'm going to conclude with this. We talked about the Ir HaMiklat, right? Okay. These 42 cities and the six big cities, 48. So we don't have these today. We have a spiritual Ir Miklat. We have a spiritual city of refuge. Or during the Gulf War, they had what's called a Cheder Atum, an enclosed room. We have that today. You know what it is? The Shema. I don't do this often. I don't preach to you guys to take something on yourselves. But I'm going to do it tonight. There were six big Ir Miklats. Says the Oy of Yisrael, this is parallel to the six words. That's the national anthem of a Jew. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. That's your city of refuge. Putting on the yoke of heaven, accepting Hashem as your God, right? Having trust on Him, loving Him, you'll be saved from all source. You'll have a tranquility, you'll have a peace of mind through troubled times. That's your city of refuge. Your spiritual city of refuge. Shema Yisrael, Hashem, you're one. Your attribute of mercy, Hashem, Elokeinu, and sometimes it looks like your attribute of justice, Hashem Echad, it's one God. I know you know what's best. And the other 42 words, you guessed it, the first paragraph of Shema, V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, right to the end of that paragraph, 42 words, right? That's parallel to these 42 Levitical cities that were used as a city of refuge, and the six big ones, Shema Yisrael. That's our spiritual city of refuge. Take refuge in God, and having faith and trust in Him. Remove the anxieties. Have tranquility, peace of mind. You want the key to happiness, the key to tranquility? Everybody should take upon themselves to say Shema Yisrael, at least that, and the first paragraph twice a day, once in the morning, once at night. That will be your ultimate source of fortification, spirituality, your beacon of truth and faith and trust in God that can carry you through day after day. Thank you very much, and have a good Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.